We're ready.
Okay, this is, I'm sorry. Okay, this is board time, Wednesday, February 11th at 2:33 p.m.
Okay, board assignments. I see that the list has been presented, and that just simply reflects all of the decisions that we made last time. And I assume that staff has updated our website, our county website, to reflect all these changes, Mark. Does that happen?
Well, I think we have a couple of gaps yet. So, actually,
yeah, really, the reason this is old business and back on, I think, Mr. Chair, is we've just got a couple of these that need an alternate assigned.
Okay.
And I'm looking through, and actually, we've done a pretty good job. I think, really, it's just there's the Washington State Association of Counties Board of Directors, which is currently Councilor Mielke. That one doesn't have an alternate. I don't know that it needs an alternate, but it's worth considering.
Which one is that?
That's your Board of Directors position on WASAC. If you could not make it, would you want someone to go in your stead?
Yeah, it's good information. And I'd probably recommend, if it doesn't get too difficult, that maybe Jeannie would do that, because she's also ledge steering.
Mm-hmm. That sounds good.
Okay.
But
would that conflict with any of the other schedules?
It's 3 to 6 times a year, it says, and I don't know that it's on a specific schedule, so I guess the answer is it could. But it's
so not, we could address it at the time.
It's not real regular.
I don't have an alternate anymore for North County Medical Services.
Yeah, that one I didn't mark, but you're correct.
We should number these or something. Where is that?
Yeah, I can't find them.
We're looking at the wrong page.
About a third of the way down, you'll see North County Emergency Medical Services.
I'm looking at the schedule here. A third of the way down.
Yeah.
Okay, well, it would be with a Tom check.
Mm-hmm. Right?
Yep.
North County, there it is. It's the third check down in.
Got it.
Okay. So you need a backup there?
Mm-hmm.
How often?
Sure,
and it
sure
says you meet fourth Thursday.
Sometimes the meetings are simple, but we're trying to rebuild out there, so we're reviewing ideas and plans, and we just scratched the plan A. We're down plan B because of dollars. And
where do you meet?
Yeah, Yakult.
Yakult?
Mm-hmm.
Oh. And is that January?
Well, that reminds me.
What are those on
the top would be.
I'm looking at the fourth Thursday / JMM. What's all that stuff?
And sometimes we don't meet on a regular basis every month.
Oh,
in fact, here it says it.
Yeah.
February, March, May, July, September, November.
Whoa. In the middle of the day.
But it's on usually on a Thursday. I think we might have had a Friday last time.
Well, I can't sign up for it. Is there...
Well, you're only looking for an alternate, right?
Yeah.
Is that like a voting position where you really make an important decision?
Oh, yeah, we vote on there.
Uh-huh. Is it a big board where...
No, it's not that big. We have people from Skamania, because they do Mount St. Helens Rescue also. And they do a report on that. It's also the fire station as well as the ambulance service.
How big a board is
Thursday.
It? How many people on the board?
Eight or ten.
Oh, okay, that's good. Medium size. And
the
you guys
services.
Are normally in unity and unanimous on your decisions?
Yeah. We do the budget. Do the budget report every time we meet. They bring us an update on the number of transports and the ones that were paid and the ones that are not paid.
So is it going to a non-elected representative vote on that board? If, for instance, if Axel was to sign up as an alternate?
I think it...
Is it a state statute that requires a commissioner?
No, it doesn't have to be, because I have a Forest Service guy. He's not elected.
Well, your call, and so what do you recommend?
Axel, that's kind of like on your way home.
Okay, we'll put an X there, and I'll check it out.
Hey, so you meet at 2. Actually, look at this. You meet at 2, you're done by 3, you're home by 4.
So, okay.
So, Axel, you're going to find out about it to make sure that our participation is...
I'll put a P for preliminary.
I'm sure, because we have Forest Service people there. There's a couple other, but we do have some elected officials from Skamania.
Okay. For the Audit Oversight Committee, the shaded ones are the ones that need a backup, right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
So I'll be happy to sign up for a backup.
Who's that?
Audit Oversight Committee. It's the first gray.
Who is that?
Me.
That's Jeannie.
Oh, I see. Okay. What color are you here?
I'm looking at the first sheet here.
You are
green. This is a convenient way to find things.
I know.
All right. So got that? I'm the backup for Audit Oversight Committee. And then we're moving down to Washington State Association of Counties. Did you already figure that one out?
That one's good.
That's good for Jeannie?
Yep.
For backup?
Yep. And then
okay.
Children's Justice Center.
And so Children's Justice Center is the next one?
That's one, the next shaded gray one.
Now, wait a minute. North County Emergency Medical Services is Axel, right?
Yes.
Okay.
David's not taking it. How come we're not taking it these days?
Actually, I am. I signed up for the first grade.
Audit oversight.
One.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're Children's Justice Center.
Uh-huh. And I'll be happy to sign up for the backup on that.
Okay. RDPO, that's our Regional Disaster Preparedness.
Oh, wait a minute. I was thinking of Elder Justice Center.
Elder Justice is down a little farther. And we do have an alternate.
Tom, you can normally attend these, right? I mean, we're not signing up to...
I'm assigned to it.
Yeah, okay. All right, then I'll take your backup for...
I backed up for you. You can back up for me now.
Okay, sign you up for
I
Children's Justice Center backup.
I can't make it next time, so...
What? Now we're down to the CDBG board. Do you want to take that, Jeannie, for backup?
That is right up Jeannie's alley.
Where? Bi-state?
No, this one right here.
The homeless group there.
The CDBG.
Is that the Urban County Policy Board?
Uh-huh, yeah.
What does it do?
They're the ones that go once per year, have a half-day trip on a shuttle bus, and we look at all the different projects that the small cities have submitted for being funded by the CDBG funds and the home funds to...
For all the people that are too lazy to work, we give them houses.
So, okay. It's the second Monday every month?
No, only the first quarter of the year max.
Okay, you're sure? Because that's not what it says here.
Because there's no other projects, really.
Okay.
I mean, that's when you go until you fund and make your decision to fund, and then you're good for the rest of the year.
And so you'll be primary and I'll be backup.
Uh-huh.
Got it.
Okay. And I'll hand in my sheet here as the master. Okay, last one, last graded. By state, when to determine venues, Metro. Jeannie Stewart's on that. Isn't that a huge, huge board, and it's really non-voting? Oh, wait.
We do vote.
It's an advisory.
But you don't get to vote.
But it's been inactive.
It looks like Jeff is covering that one, too.
And Jeff does. Actually, he's very solid and very reliable about that.
What's a transportation?
Actually, Jeff, we can put him on there for backup.
Yeah.
Okay, all right.
Okay, good.
And if there's...
Okay. There's my list for the record.
Well done, Councilor.
We're done. What's next? Okay. Moving on. Okay. New business. Legislative call.
And I know Mike has a 3 or something, so we'll try to get...
Councilor Medora's got a 3:30 or so.
I was at the Elder Justice Center event.
Hey, I'm going to put you on speaker
today, and they had a bill, SB 5788, I think it was.
Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, sorry, it took us a little bit to get to you, Mike, but you are you're live in the conference room with the usual folks here.
Suspects.
And they have, they should have the bill tracker in their packet, this kind of color-coded thing, or the ones that Mike's been following.
Okay. Got it.
And, it's got some colors we'll explain, and then I've got some backup materials that I can hopefully help describe them to you. But, Councilor Medora, I didn't mean to jump in there. You were talking about the Elder Justice Center, I think.
Hey, Mike.
Hello, Councilor. How are you?
I'm doing very well. I see on that first sheet there, the last blue on page 1, Elder Justice Center by Cleveland. I assume you're going to cover that when you get to it. I was at the Elder Justice Center event today. They have an annual event, and they're very excited about that bill. I don't know anything about it except they like it. Anyway, you have it. I would just say you're trying to crank through the important stuff to get her done.
Yeah, so Mike, because of time, maybe we can stick to the blue ones unless others come up.
Can you explain to the council or the board what the color scheme means?
So Mike and I started doing this. These are bills that he's tracking, and I'm exporting them into an Excel spreadsheet each week for you. The green-colored bills are bills that you all in this room probably have already supported. So you voted to support those. The red ones are bills you voted to oppose, and the blue ones are ones we're looking for possible decisions on today.
Nice bookkeeping.
And as you see, the Elder Justice one there, 5788, is one. It's blue because we were going to talk about it.
Okay.
And so, Mike, why don't you add anything you want, and then we'll jump right to House Bill 1517, which is the first blue one.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree with Axel. I think it's a good little tracking system. He deserves the credit for the color coding. And you'll notice there are some of the bills on here that we have not asked you to take positions on, or I haven't. And part of that's just because I don't get a sense that they're going to pass or they're moving right now. I certainly reserve the right to revisit them, but they are just bills that I've thrown on that I want to pay attention to, and in some cases I've actually already talked to some of your county staff about them to see if they have impacts. And so that's why we're not taking a position on every single thing. And Axel's right, the ones that are in blue today are ones that I'd like to hear your opinions on. Frankly, I kind of feel where you'll be on each one, but certainly we want to encourage you, and I want to hear from you on those. And like you mentioned, Councilor Medora, the 5788, Senator Cleveland specifically asked me to get an opinion on that bill. And then there's the other one of hers, 5897, that's at the bottom. That's a rehash of a bill from last year. It's a little bit different, but those two specifically. But yeah, certainly that's if you want to start running down from the beginning.
So yeah, 1517 is the liquor revenue distribution. So that's funds for local jurisdictions. I think we probably support that. I've got the bill in front of me.
This is a restoration of revenue that was swept from local governments in last year's budget cycle, somewhat in response to the liquor privatization initiative. The initiative wasn't a cause of this, but it was. Collateral damage, maybe. I don't know if that's the right way to describe it. But anyway, this bill would seek to reinstate that. The truth is that cities actually get a lot more liquor revenue than counties do, but I did put it on the list because it would, again, restore funds that you've gotten in the past, and I don't see a downside to supporting it.
Okay.
Yep, the bill would actually give 10% to counties, and then, like you said, 40% goes to incorporated cities, but it's one we don't have now.
That is the companion measure to 5896, which is towards the bottom. They're the same bill.
Okay, so in Benton's for it. Okay, so we have consensus to support both of those.
Yes.
Okay.
But
and
before you go too
as
far,
best
I'd like
I
to.
I understand it.
Yeah, we understand it's preliminary. We trust that you are. You share our values.
Yes, yeah, Councillor, I wouldn't set you up to support something that I have a feeling that you wouldn't. I wouldn't do that. On purpose, anyway.
You're a good guy.
So I have a question about the next one down that you don't have a color to.
Which one?
It's 1539.
Yes.
I understand that Representative Pike also has one similar to that, having to do with the senior waiver on property tax. So I'm thinking hardship and property.
Councillor, I just may not have flagged it and put it on the list. You want me to dig into that and get back to
that? See if it's the same thing. It's been 20 years since that's been adjusted, and yet everything else has been adjusted or attached to cost of living. So.
Okay. I will dig through that, Maxwell, and I'll have it for you. I'll get you some info on it, and maybe we'll revisit that next week.
All right.
Okay, next blue one is 1789. That's the real estate excise tax. And basically, the big thing to remember about real estate excise tax is there's more than one kind. There's REIT 1, REIT 2. And what it does is it has to be spent on capital projects. And it's and for a long time, as county partners, we've been trying to use more of it as we get capital projects done on operation and maintenance.
So it gives flexibility.
Over the years, Councilor, you may have heard this referred to as the REIT harmonization legislation. It has a Senate companion, which is 5585. So that's why there's the two on the list. You in particular, Council Ledore, may remember that this was a discussion point during at Lake Chelan for what would be one of the WASAC.
Yeah, which is flexibility
priorities.
Flexibility.
So this is that concept, that issue.
Yeah. So all this does is grant flexibility to those taxes. So you don't have to pay them on, use it only for capital, right?
That's correct. If I heard yes.
Okay.
You may remember too, Councillor, that there are issues with the realtors having opposition to this legislation, and Josh and the staff at WASAC are currently working with them to get them to a position of, I don't know that there'll be support, but at least a position of neutrality. So this is it's a little bit of a moving target right now.
Okay.
I just wanted to make you aware of that as well.
Okay.
And I talked to Bob Stevens about it, and he thinks it's okay for us to support in terms of how our REIT funds are.
Yeah,
right?
I
we won't have a lot of adjustments.
I think it's a good bill. I think the opposition from the real estate people is that it's funded by transactions of the sale of real estate.
Yeah.
That's true, Councilor. Inconsistently, they have said they want to keep these monies. I'll use the word siloed.
I know.
The way they are. But again, I think it's pretty simple as a flexibility measure for you to use the funds the way you all see fit.
Absolutely.
Okay, so we have consensus and to green light both of those?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, we do.
The next one, House Bill 2047, deals with eminent domain, and this is kind of an interesting one for us because we've been heavily involved in the BPA transmission line project. So this is a bill that Representative Vic put forward that deals with condemnation and eminent domain I'm couching it in my own terms, try to help those property owners that will be impacted potentially by the transmission line. And I've read through the bill I have it here in front of me. It seems like the operative language basically says, instead of allowing BPA or the transmission line to come in and purchase an easement across your property, if you're a timber owner or a farmer, this says the person being condemned, their property who's being condemned, can require BPA to use the eminent domain process to establish a fee simple and up to any contiguous land. So basically, if you're a farmer out there and you have 100 acres and BPA wants to come through the middle of your farm with a line, you have the ability to say, you're going to take the whole farm. I don't want my farm bisected, or I don't want my timber tree farm bisected. If you're going to do it to me, you need to take, you need to give me to
so
the option to take all my
property. It gives landowners extra protection, private property rights. That's flexibility. It doesn't require it. It gives them the option.
And I've got to admit to you, today was the first time I really went through it, so that's my understanding reading through it, is that it will help and give more options to those people impacted by the transmission line.
With a simultaneous reduction in property tax revenue to the jurisdiction in which that property lies.
So there's also something about the way it's taxed different, or the way you have to claim it as a income. If it's taken by eminent domain, you may not pay tax on it. But if you sell it, you have to pay tax on it. Is that part of it?
That's a good question.
Oh, you mean the open space tax waiver reduction?
There's a different way of it. If they take it from you, you have to pay, or you don't have to pay.
Yeah, certainly if you sell it, there's going to be tax implications. I'm not sure on the eminent domain side of things. That's a good point. I'd have to dig into it, but that's probably true.
Wouldn't be fair to inflict that injury to injury.
Some people prefer that you take it through eminent domain. They get a tax break. If they sell it to you, they pay taxes on it. So you might take a look at that, Mike, and see if that curtail has something to do with that.
Well, I have a little reservation here. So other than a tax factor, why would, if you were a farmer and you held land, would you want BPA to take all of the land you own? Or are you saying maybe take a certain part, maybe it's not all the land, maybe it's part of the land because they need a tax credit against other income?
No, yeah. I think what they feel if you take it down, strip down the middle of my property,
it's worthless.
It makes it more difficult.
I see that point. Mm-hmm. So if it depends on what the alignment would be.
Well,
generally it sounds like it would build in some protection where we need power lines and we're trying to keep whomever's property it is as whole as possible.
See, the problem was that we didn't need the power lines. It was for California.
Mike, do I understand correctly that this does not require anybody to do anything? All this does is it gives an option to the landowner that says if he wants or she wants to be able to have all of the property up to their property line handled as a chunk, that's the option they can select if they want, voluntarily, right?
Yes, Counselor, that's the way I understand it. Maybe based on this discussion, this is an issue we could come back to you with, knowing that the bill hasn't been scheduled for a hearing yet. Frankly, it has to be scheduled for a hearing next week.
Okay.
And the hearing agenda comes out tonight. The prime sponsor wasn't hopeful that he even would get a hearing. But I put this on the list because I don't know if you remember, but last summer when I was down, Representative Vic brought this bill up to me. I mentioned it to you as the board, and you had expressed support at that time. And certainly, Councillor Stewart, that predates your position as a councillor. So.
Okay.
Maybe we can get some of that clarity, but frankly, this issue may take care of itself in the sense that the bill may not move anyway.
Okay. So let's dig into it this week and bring it back, Mike.
Yep.
Sure. And then, and I mentioned before, actually, the next blue one, their 5585, is the refill. You already talked about that.
Yep.
So you're at the Elder Justice.
We're back to Elder Justice, Councilor Medora.
Yeah, I don't know anything about it except they like it. What do you know?
What it does is it... I got it right here. I just read through it. And I actually tried to put a call into Mr. Golick, but I didn't get a chance to talk to him.
Mr. Golick brought this bill forward.
Yeah, and so I just wanted to talk to him about it. But basically what it does is it requires that the state establish two elder justice centers, one in Spokane, one in Clark County. And basically they'll be used as pilot projects. And it goes into a lot of detail about there's 21,000 cases for investigation in elder abuse and in this area every year, and of those, you know, I think that's adult protective service cases. So it lays out a very strong case for why elder abuse and elder justice is so important, especially with the baby boomer population, you know, getting older, and just this need to establish these pilot projects to see if we can start to get a handle on some of these.
We already have an Elder Justice Center. How does it establish an Elder Justice Center if we already have one?
I think
more state funding.
Yeah, I'm going to go out on a limb and say that the state needs to help local instead of us as local jurisdictions coming up with this stuff voluntarily on our own and using our local resources to put this together. The state needs to get involved.
Okay. Where was the companion bill to that?
It's on the next page.
The reason I asked the question: why is it being heard in the health department, health committee? They have something to do with medical.
Let me go double check that.
So the companion bill was which one?
I don't believe that one had a companion.
Yeah, oh. I didn't see it.
Okay.
Okay, so if it's what we think it is, it sounds like there's no negative side of that. That's all positive. That says state funding for our Elder Justice Center, good thing. I know they like it. Tony Golick is a big fan. I've sat in on that board.
There was a similar bill that came through that Cleveland also did for CJC, the Children's Justice Center.
That's on the next page.
Further down the list.
Right. Oh, okay.
So we have consensus on SB 5799.
I'd like to know more about it.
I'm good with it. If the Elder Justice Committee or...
Yeah, no, it's done, it. Done in health care.
Councilor Mookie, you're saying you want to know more about the Elder Justice Center bill?
Yeah, I do, because it's being heard in the health committee.
Actually, you said you reached out to the prosecutor. Maybe we get that information from the prosecutor.
Yeah.
I would imagine he's got a write-up or a description of it that may be helpful.
Why don't we do this, because we can give you a preliminary green light as enablement, because Jeannie and I are good with it. And then if Tom's good with it, then say you got a green light, and you're the gatekeeper, Tom.
Yeah, I don't have a real serious problem with it. I'm concerned with where they're going to go with that. If they run it through the health committee, are their seniors going to have less health care? Is their health care going to be handled differently than what they normally do under Medicaid?
Yeah, no, I think that this... I'll get some more information this week, and I'll work with Commissioner Mielke on it. I got to just talk with either John Fairgrave or Tony Golick.
For now, I'll put a plus sign on it, so... Tom,
I'm good.
Okay, Tom's good. Then we have consensus.
See if we get some more. Axel will probably come up with it.
Okay, next page.
So 5828. I need some help if you can on this one.
This is one of Senator Benton's bills dealing with the high capacity transit corridors. Essentially, what it does is it says in order to establish a corridor, you would have to, a county where it's going to be established has to adjoin more than three counties. Okay. Our county does not. So in essence, this would, by my read, would preclude Clark County from establishing a high-capacity transit corridor.
I'm good
with that. I like it.
Because C-Tran is failing on their bus service. They keep declining. They can't manage what they have, and they keep reaching out to this more spendy stuff to drive up costs and drive up fares. They need to do the basics well first before they can keep reaching for more money.
I don't know. I'm a little cautious about indicating three counties.
That's the way you kill it.
Well, I'm, you know.
So
I think it has merit. I think
it does, because if you have a high capacity corridor,
for what you think a high capacity transit corridor is, I think is a crucial kind of a decision. I'm not opposed to it.
Okay, so we have support consensus.
Yeah.
Yes. Okay. What's next?
5896. We already covered. So we're at 5897, and that's Senator Cleveland's bill with regard to the suspected child assault victim thing. Mike, I don't have that one in front of me, so I apologize.
And this had something to do with health care of child victims.
And getting some cost recovery.
Yeah.
Councilor Mook, this was a subject we had last session.
Yes.
It is scheduled for a hearing tomorrow at 10. Let me read you what the bill just says. It just says, prohibits the cost incurred by an institution for the examination of a suspected victim of assault of a child from being billed or charged directly or indirectly to the suspected victim of the assault, requires that those costs will be paid by the state. It's not a cost shift on you. It sounds to me like it's protecting the victims, and again, having the state pay those costs through the process.
The actual cost of that is relatively small because we don't have that many, but it's nice to know that the limited dollars that CJC has could be spent better someplace else rather than picking up that cost. And sometimes we do work for other neighboring counties, and we don't want to get stuck on those bills either.
And last year, if I recall right, one of your staff members, or from the acronym counselor that you just used, came and spoke in favor of this, and you all did take a position in support of it. And of course, again, yep. Counselor Stewart minus you at that time.
You are correct.
And I believe it was unanimous with the board last year.
You are correct.
And it still is.
Okay. Then I will sign us in pro on that bill tomorrow.
Okay.
Okay, 5914 is, that's the fireworks regulation bill, and I got this on my desk because it looked like there was a Columbian article where Mark Brown was quoted as being opposed to it because it kind of restricts some of the local flexibility when it comes to regulation of fireworks. I read through it a couple of times and didn't find where I had serious issues, but maybe I'm missing something.
And I only included this because, counselors, I'm aware of the ordinance you adopted. I don't know whether you did it last summer, whenever you did it, where you, in essence, the way I understood it, you split the county. And I wanted Axel to flag this bill to make sure it doesn't impact your ability to adopt that ordinance and preempt your authority.
So in my reading of it, Mike, it doesn't look to impact city and county's ability to restrict or regulate the hours of use or sale. Where it may impact us and where we may want to wait to take a position and look deeper at it is it does look like it wants to come up with statewide standards for location of stands, setback requirements, and kind
of... Well, then, Axel, maybe it makes sense to show this to the... I assume whichever one of your attorneys drafted your fireworks ordinance that was adopted and double-check to make sure we're okay. If this were to pass, or if we want to take a position or ask for amendments or whatnot.
The only thing I understand that the bill does, you might want to double check it, and that is it takes away the limited number of people that have the ability, have the right to sell fireworks. It takes away the limited number of stands that we have.
I think Councilor Milkey's right, and that was Mark Brown's concern. He says... local cities and counties would lose the ability to regulate the number of fireworks stands within their borders and which types of permits could be used for fireworks. Mm-hmm.
So I was actually in the room when Mark testified, and he went further than what was put in the paper. And it was, you know, it's a local control issue. The bill does preempt your ability to do certain things. And I just, again... Because of the order that you had adopted, want to make sure that you were aware of this, and we checked on it. But maybe, actually, this is something we can take a peek at and come back with, too, next time.
I think it could be a good bill, because one of the things that we always complained about, why is it that we don't have a lottery process? We go out there and reappoint it to certain individuals.
Actually, we do have a lottery process.
But we limit the amount of people that could do it. That's the problem. Is that
by lottery.
Yeah, it's a free enterprise system, and we have other nonprofit organizations out there that would love to do that to help their cause. So it's been discussed a lot. I would think it'd be okay, but I'm not sure about my counterpart.
And do we have time between now and then, in a week from now, to be able to learn more about this?
Yes.
Okay, then let's learn from it. I'll put a question mark, okay?
So how did the hearing go?
I don't appreciate the hearing, Counselor. It wasn't anything out of the ordinary. The folks that want this bill is, you may remember Jerry Farley.
Yeah.
Jerry represents the fireworks folks, as I refer to them. That's all that, as I understand, it's called the Independent State Foundation Association, but I believe they're all the fireworks manufacturers.
So what they're saying is that since we're restricting the days you can sell it, we'd like to have more locations that you could buy it from.
Right. I understood it to be barriers to sale, is the way I took it. But I'm paraphrasing what you said.
So did it pass out of committee?
No, it hadn't moved yet.
Well, it hasn't moved. Okay.
Well, my last one is I'd have to go back and double check. I'm actually walking down the street now, so I have to do that with you. But I can get back to you and let you know, or Axel can maybe punch in the bill number to see if the House version had moved.
Yeah.
And there is a House companion. So.
If it didn't pass out of committee, it doesn't matter.
No, I don't think it has yet.
Okay,
I don't check.
But they had a hearing. That's strange.
Okay. So, Mark, you've got a number of these that are no color at all, and a number of them are offered by our local legislators. What's the scoop? What's the scoop on those?
Well, in terms of that's my opinion that those bills aren't likely to move for whatever reason, or they haven't been scheduled for hearings yet. That's all that is.
Okay.
So that's not an indication as to whether or not I think you'd support them or not. It's just a prioritization of what's moving and what's not.
Okay.
You know, there have been over 2,000 bills introduced this session already.
So
if I make an argument that over a third of them could apply to the county, but I'm certainly not going to bring all of them to you because they're just not likely to move. So
and we appreciate that.
If they look like they're going to hit the front burner, then you'll bring it to our attention.
Yes.
Okay.
If they start to move or look like they want us to take an opinion, and then, by example, on those two bills by Senator Cleveland, she asked me specifically to bring those to you.
Okay.
And when one of our delegation does that, I'm going to bring those bills to you.
Okay, great. All right, I guess that wraps it, right?
No, I have a question.
Oh, got a question.
So, Senate Bill 5128 concerning dedicated funding sources for high-capacity transportation service.
Yes, that's the what's known as the Sound Transit Bill.
Well, some call it that.
Tell me. Other jurisdictions have been amended out of that bill. It only impacts those Puget Sound area now.
Okay, so where will I get a copy of the amended version?
You make a note, and Axel, if you shoot me just a blank message asking for that bill, I will get it to you this evening, Counselor, if that's okay with
you.
What's the number again?
SB 5128.
All you need to do is actually shoot me an email with HCT bill in the subject line, and I'll know what it means and get it to the council this afternoon or this evening.
Okay. Or I can send it to you right now.
Well, and I'm trying to see what process that's what it's amended.
So you're going
to
want to do.
Yes.
Mark, if you're looking at it, you can look at the House version and the amendments that were adopted in committee, because one of the amendments in committee narrows it to just those counties. The Senate version was heard yesterday, and I know that the Senate chair intends to amend it the same way.
What, the House bill number is the same?
No.
No, I think it's 1128, but I'm not. That's why I can get that to
that
you.
That sounds right.
Tonight when I do get back to my computer.
Okay, are we done? Okay,
yeah.
Anything else, Mike?
Not on my end. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay. Moving on to 2.2, Declaration of Independence.
Before we get away from this, on this list right here, there's a one that sparks another. I see Benton has an issue with local stormwater with the DOT.
Mm-hmm.
Did the DOT agree and pay us for the back bill that we gave them?
They've agreed to. I don't know if we've received the check yet.
Would you find out if we received the check?
Yeah.
Okay.
If they drag their feet on that, we're not going to get that check back.
Okay. All right, now can we move on? 2.2, Declaration of Independence and Constitution. I also wanted to clarify something because I want to set the record straight because it's been reported out there that we rejected and we voted against the proposal yesterday. That is not the case. We did two things. One is that we did not move it forward, and we also determined that we have more homework to do when it comes to finding what's appropriate to put in that room. So I want to make sure that everybody knows we did not vote it down, we just didn't vote on it. And we did move the subject forward to this board time for us to have opportunity to kind of make progress on this and see what's appropriate. Commissioner Stewart, you did a little homework. You want to share something on this?
I did. I have been struck by a quote that is out of the Washington State Constitution. It is Article 1, Section 1, and it simply says, all political power is inherent in the people, and governments derive their just power from the consent of the governed, and are established to protect and maintain individual rights. And the reason that I've been struck with that is because that's what the three of us have been saying for years, mm-hmm. is that that is our job. It's that it is not our power. We're not the kings. We're not mm-hmm. the bosses. We're not the controllers. We have any authority we have because we're empowered to do so by the citizens, and our responsibility is to them. And this board is one of the only political organizations I've heard state that over and over and over again, because even when I was on the council, that statement was made out of this board for a long time. So it's from, I think, a neutral, this isn't federal, it's our state constitution. And I think we should think about posting that, where when citizens come in to our chambers, they know we know. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is, the citizens need to get the grasp of how our government is supposed to work. Mm-hmm. It's not supposed to have us going around making our deals, and they hope not too much harm is done by it. It should be more interactive than that. And each person who's elected needs to take that dire responsibility onto themselves that you are representing other people. So that's something that, frankly, I have taped to my kitchen cupboard door, mm-hmm. and have for about a year. Mm-hmm. It's a bookmark, actually. And so I look at it every morning. It's above my coffee pot. And I think it's a good reminder to electeds and an excellent reminder to the citizens. We're doing your work.
Mm-hmm. I would think it might be better to have the oath of office that we took up there.
Well,
the oath that we took, personally.
In other words, remind us of the foundations and the principles behind these things.
Yeah.
And I also, I see you got Article 1, Section 1, and I looked at that, our state constitution, and right ahead of that, right at the very beginning of that, I think we ought to post both the preamble, Article 1, Section 1, and Article 1, Section 2. Let me just read the preamble. It says, "We, the people of the state of Washington, grateful to the supreme ruler of the universe for our liberties, do ordain this constitution." So they just laid a foundation that went way beyond what we were talking about yesterday. Quite amazing. The section 2 says, "Supreme law of the land, the Constitution of the United States is the supreme law of the land." And in other words, our state constitution recognizes that the supreme law of the land is not the state constitution, it's the U.S. Constitution. And by the way, just for, our state constitution has 118 pages of very fine print, and our U.S. Constitution is like 3. So it would be not very practical to try to post the state constitution, not 118 pages of fine print, unless you like wallpaper. But certainly those first three sections, or the preamble and section 1 and 2, sounds good.
Well, they're incorrect, because the law of the land is done by the county. The state puts forth the basic rule of law, and the county supersedes it in many cases.
Well, I think what you're speaking of is the county the county provides specificity, details, and local implementation of specifics, when the general powers are authorized by the state. never seen.
Our hearings examiners recognize our ordinances as law.
Yes, absolutely.
And our laws would trump this if we supersede it.
Well,
so it's actually inaccurate. Someone's going to come in here and says, it says right there, you're supposed to follow the Constitution of the state of Washington, and you haven't. Because in my case, it's a stretch. It's a stretch. While they're all good in all the Constitution, I believe it's very great. I have it on the wall in my office.
Well, yeah, I think we're all in agreement here that the foundations, as long as we are, whatever we do needs to be authorized by our foundational documents and our state constitution, those first three ones, the preamble and the section one and two, it would be appropriate for that to be posted somewhere in the hearing room. Does that sound like something you would think is appropriate?
No.
No?
No, I think it beats around the bush and it's inaccurate.
Well, this is a quote from the Constitution itself.
It's true with the Constitution, but the laws that we supersede our state laws overrule state laws, which is less restrictive.
You want to spend a little time and bring that back next week?
Yeah, we can do that.
All right. We'll put that off next week so you can do a little more research and tell us what you recommend then. Okay.
And I was kind of hoping for just some kind of real simple reminder. We know what our job is because we talk about it all the time. I would really like the citizens to understand that you can't blame, we can't look at our elected officials and blame them for all the ills of the world if we are not realizing.
I would post that one.
Well, the citizens need to realize that the power is in their hands.
Yes.
And in some cases, they need to reacquire it and have the confidence.
I agree. If I want to reemphasize that because we see.
I want that.
Yeah.
I want that. I want it.
Yes. And we're faced with that because the time that that local government gets in trouble is when the office holder somehow doesn't know what the Constitution says, doesn't know what our foundations say, and actually presumes that the citizens forfeited their power to their elected representative, no longer to act as a representative because their misrepresentation is authorized at that point, to overrule and rule over and somehow to license elitism.
In my years in office, I've sat on any number of boards and commissions where the people who sit there representing the citizens see it as their power and their authority, and they don't really need to connect, they don't really need to talk to the citizens because that's not for them to think about.
Yeah. In other words, they see it as the people have transferred all of their power and all authority to me.
Unquestioningly and without regard to me keeping them informed.
Right. And that's where we get dysfunction happen.
Yeah.
And I think that, well, that's why I really enjoy serving on this board, is because we share that common belief that this matters and this is our role, and the people did not forfeit their authority to us for us to make the call, and we are somehow elevated above as dictators. Instead, we serve, we represent, we represent their voice, and we are not to misrepresent them.
And it does not demean our position to serve someone else. It's not, I think sometimes elected officials fancy themselves as something great.
Yeah.
And so the idea that they serve
You know, you know what they believe that when they fill this room out here, that that's the majority of the people.
It's not. It's not
it's
the majority not. Of the
I've seen it over and over again. One time that
well,
room
that's
was
where
full.
We do have to be careful.
That
There's
room
no
was full,
yeah.
And they were all against me. And I finally looked up at him and I said, you might be the majority in this room, but I believe that you're the minority.
Well,
and I
that's
was right.
Because
okay.
we circulate in more than just the hearing.
So that's the problem I'm having. So when you've got two-thirds of the people here wanting something done, and that's the only people that show up, and you vote the other way, they're going to turn around and say, well, wait a minute. We're the majority of the people here, and you're supposed to represent us.
Yeah, I know.
That's what they perceive.
Yeah, I'll be specific.
That's exactly what they perceive.
Where we see this being violated is on CTRAN and on RTC. And RTC, being that we've got unelected bureaucrats outvoting the elected representatives, and the elected representatives from the state don't even have a vote. They sit there as non-voting members, not thinking, oh, that's, to me, that goes against the grain.
It does go both ways. Yesterday, we had two-thirds of the people that came from Portland and Tacoma end up being the majority out here, and we took action to satisfy the majority of the people here.
Well,
no.
Actually, we didn't take action.
I
chose not to take
disagree.
Action because of the majority of the people here.
No, that is
no?
not true.
Oh, okay.
Absolutely, that is not true. I've been screamed at way more than those people could scream at.
You've been hardened. No, or should I say battle-hardened?
Seasoned.
Because
yeah.
You know what it's about? It's not about us. It's about the principles and about the people that we somehow, as best fallible as we are,
well,
strive to represent.
Our judgment and our experience. Mm-hmm. And our knowledge, it has to count.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
And
right.
Then he quacked.
Okay. So what I'd like to be able to do, so Tom, you're going to bring that, the state constitution, the preamble in section 1 and 2, you're going to research that, bring that back next week.
Yeah, I'll
feedback.
Look at it
okay.
some more, yeah.
I would propose also that...
Yeah. Okay. I'll try to see how we can get around that. But
that, Mark, why don't you see what... If this be okay with you, fellow commissioners, if you can find a... How would we get a large print version of the most readable version of our U.S. Declaration of Independence?
Would you want it to have that antique look and feel?
No, I want it to be most readable. It's not a piece of art. It's a...
Okay, so you want it in
it's
large
a reminder.
Font, English
large,
language
most,
text,
most
New
readable.
York Times or something along those lines.
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
What are you talking about?
The Declaration of Independence.
Yeah.
That lays the principles, a foundation. And I'll divide the Declaration of Independence into two parts. The first part says, actually three parts.
What?
The Declaration of Independence.
Yeah, well, why not put the whole thing up there?
Well, you can't.
That's what we're talking about.
He said we're talking about parts of it.
No. Well, I am. In
he
addition
is.
To the idea of the
workplace violence,
the whole thing, you've got the foundation laying and the preparation for here it comes. And then the here it comes is a list of the offenses from King George. He did this and this and this and this and this. And that takes up a lot of it. And there's a lot of specifics. And then there's the conclusion at the end of it that says, based on all this, this is what we're going to do. And that's the conclusion. Because that list is pretty long, if you're going to post one Declaration of Independence, the whole thing, it kind of shrinks everything else when it comes to the principles that live today. So I'm interested to know if there is a way that somehow we can highlight both. Show the whole thing, but also remind us of the foundations that it laid, both at the beginning and at the end, outside of that list of offenses. See what you can come up with, and then we'll do some one-on-ones. And
well, sure. I'm sure there are ways we can get it from the internet, or we can actually create our own and then print it on a plotter and make it big and
like a map.
Yeah, sure. put a frame around
something
it,
something like that.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So you talking about bringing it to the hearing, or you're bringing it back to this board?
What I'm thinking is that would be a proposal of what it would look like, and then we would find a spot out there in the room to post it like this.
Color of the sidewalks.
Well, most readable.
Okay.
Because you don't normally read artwork. And I did print out a version of it, and it's pretty hard to read.
And
it's
it would
artwork.
Have to be on a wall where, you know, people can stand and look at it.
Mm-hmm.
So if that's what the goal is. But I'm not really clear in this picture what... We're going to talk about this in board time next week, right?
Yeah.
Yes. That's my take.
So by then, I think...
We'll see some proposals.
Yeah.
Okay. Anything else?
Nope.
Okay. I looked at what would be appropriate, and I've been continuing to consider what would be appropriate in that room. We didn't vote on it, and I've continued to chew on it. I want to make sure the message is out there. We did not kill that thing. We did not dismiss it. Did we not reject it? And I sorted out my thoughts last night as I posted on my Facebook. And as a result of the hearing everybody yesterday, sleeping on it, considering all this, and it's become more clear to me that what we went into that hearing, we went in there not without understanding the clarification. I had a kind of assumed that we would take down the current county motto and replace it with this federal motto. And you don't know. You have a public hearing because you want to hear. It's not a foregone conclusion. It's not a formality that you needed to get through in order to finally do what you're predetermined you're going to do anyway. That's not the purpose for a hearing. A hearing is to give us insight, to understand, to clarification, so that we can make a more informed decision. What is clear to me now is that we have two different things. We have a county model, and that model represents us as a local community. But this local community is not a silo. We don't stand alone. We are part of a nation. And the nation, America, has its motto. And we are part of America. And it would be very appropriate to add our nation's motto also. And I'm thinking, how do you do that in a way that would be appropriate when it comes to where and how? And I stood in the hearing room today looking from the back, and put a $20 bill up, right? See how long that lasts.
Facsimile there.
I need
so
one of those.
You see this framing here in this room? Behind our chairs where the counselors sit is also some beautiful woodwork back there as well. And so we got the town. Let's pretend I'm sitting at the dais here. In front of us here is the county model. Don't touch it. That's our county model. That stays the same. Behind us here is this beautiful woodwork, and up at the top is a frame that would, I can just imagine, that our federal, our state, our nation motto up there. And it would be the same font as you'd find on a penny, brass in color.
Small.
And
small.
No, I actually went up and I kind of explored out there, and it's about three quarters bigger than my iPhone 6 Plus.
There's a reason why I brought it forward the way I did, because I didn't want to get into a discussion of where to put it. I just wanted to agree that somewhere in here we'll agree to find a place to put it. If you get down to saying, well, I want to put it here, and I don't like it there, so I'm going to vote against it. Or if I want to put it over there, then you don't like it, so I'm going to vote against it. The idea was to accept the idea that we'll agree to put it somewhere.
Well, so all good things
that's
start
why
with...
I keep saying, don't argue over the color of the sidewalks when you're building a road.
Oh, I'm just throwing it out there.
Because people won't like the road because they don't want the color
understand.
Of the sidewalks.
Yeah.
Well, sidewalks going to be white.
No, I want to paint.
I like to...
Are you sure?
...to cast gray. A vision... And picture this, and then make it specific. Otherwise, it's a thing where, you know, the more definition you can bring, and the more you can see it, the more we can say, you know, that's a pretty well-defined and how it leave room for improvement, and I'm open for improvement. I'll just throw that out there and see as a bounce it off you guys and see what you think.
Jeannie, what do you think?
I haven't thought about any of that until I've just heard it just now. So,
what do you think about the base idea of placing it somewhere in there?
I don't know about that either.
Okay.
If you're going to sketch out how you would envision that to be,
I'd be happy to.
Give you a picture
proposal
of what I envision too.
Yes.
Okay.
No, I would. No, I. And I'm talking scrap paper is good, yeah. Just so I can kind of visualize. But really, what it sounds to me like is we're kind of circling back around again to
where we were.
Exactly.
We didn't have clarification. We didn't have a way that would bring definition to it. And that's what I was fishing for.
But see, I brought that forward to this board 4 weeks prior to going to the hearing. Four weeks.
Full credit, sir.
You could have brought something. You could have talked about that 4 weeks before I went to the floor.
All that lost opportunity, maybe we'll finally get it right.
You could have amended it on the floor.
Well, this is your leadership, and it took us, at least it took me a while to catch up.
Okay.
And I like to be able to imagine how would something specifically play out, what would it look like, and I'm a very visual person. I have to see
it. You know, we might put it someplace
in my imagination, at least.
That just doesn't look right. And that'd be Jeannie, because she's the woman who likes to move things around.
Well,
when you brought it forward. It is clear that you handed it out, that I didn't comment, I didn't demonstrate enthusiasm, I didn't demonstrate support, I didn't say I think it's a bad idea, but...
She plays poker.
Yes, I do. For money.
For money, I'm not going to mess with that.
That's how she can afford this job.
Yeah.
Does it have to be be in the hearing room?
Well, that's what I'm proposing. That's where we meet.
That's the purpose of...
That's where we got our county motto.
And this is where
we have a county motto anyplace else?
In front of the building.
I was just thinking that this wall with your photos, Board of County Commissioners...
What I'm thinking is that this isn't for us. This is for this is us as a community of citizens.
You know, I really envisioned and thought that the phrase "In God We Trust" brings that to the people. It was brought to us to take care of. It's a unity, a ceremonial type thing, as the formation, the history of our country, and we are part of that as we are a part of government.
Well,
so
yeah.
When I say they spun it and twisted it around, they twisted it because they just didn't like the word God, the generic term God, they didn't like.
Well, I understand that, and I respect that, because the
that's their job.
Really meant to...
That's their goal.
It's really meant to be each person can define what that means to them. It may mean the golden rule. It may mean goodwill. It may mean a moral code. It may be whatever foundation, guiding principles guide us so that we don't just simply be without any kind of or some anchor. So it's generic enough where each person has the freedom to have a... We all have some kind of a moral compass, and I think that's what it represents. Anyway, so we want to make sure we're inclusive of everyone, but we also understand that we're part of a nation, and it is a fact that we have a heritage, and we have a national model, and we are part of that. I will. We can bring that back next week. In the meantime, we can, Mark, we can consider what other options you may translate that into in the way of what it could look like. Winery ordinance. We want to move on?
What time do you have to leave?
pretty soon. It should be pretty simple. We labored very diligently to do the best we can to find the right balance for the winery ordinance that protected both the wineries and the neighbors last year. And what we discovered, now that we've played that out, is one of the things that we did not test and we kind of presumed was going to be work the way we thought it was going to work ended up not be the case. And I'll take responsibility for that. There's one change to the sound specification on that, and it really corrects, it simply corrected easily, and that is in section D1I, we just simply strike out the words after the WAC specification. That's all. And we provide the, just simply so it would read, comply with the standards of Chapter 173-60 WAC. In other words, we really can't improve on the state noise standard. It is the standard for everything we do. The problem, the reason that this comes to our attention now is that now that we have some history on this and we have some real-world experience on this and we have our own sound meter here, that that meter has two different settings. It has an A mode and a C mode. And A mode is pretending it's a human ear, and it's meant to be sensitive to the things that we humans are sensitive to, and that's what the WAC is based on, mode A. But our intention, and this was my proposal at the time, and what I found out was an error, my intention was to include the bass notes, those notes that would transmit further and more transparently through structures, through a home, the bass notes, the percussions, and to make sure somehow we weren't letting that get through. We wanted to make sure we measured that as well. The problem is the mode C does much more than that. It actually makes it so it's not workable because it measures sub-audible sounds, rumbles, and things that we can't even hear, and it has the effect of just simply push the button from mode C to mode A, from mode A to mode C, and it will just simply bump up the decibel readings by about 11 or 12, and just mean it's that the natural environment by itself with no noise making already exceeds or is right at the threshold of the acceptable standard. In other words, it becomes unenforceable, it becomes unrealistic, and no longer is it a useful tool to actually measure a source of noise. And those noises are typically from roads and freeways that are miles away, air conditioning systems, and anything that makes low-frequency kinds of things that can penetrate and just is a ubiquitous part of our environment. And this, so that was the unintended consequence. We make this thing so that we've set our code enforcement and our law enforcement officers up for failure with a standard that they can't use. So the simple fix is just simply use the state noise standard, the state WAC. Also, we received in here, the only change is just simply the little strikeout on this one page. All the other pages are the source documentation, and one of those documentations is a letter from, I think, a Department of Environmental Services, or DOE, and they say that if you're going to deviate from the WAC, you need to get their approval. We didn't know that. We didn't do it. So this would correct that as well. So we would have to reschedule a hearing, propose that change, and in order to modify the ordinance to fix it. And what I would suggest is that if either of you want to be able to see that firsthand, Maybe Paul Scarpelli can come up with the instrument himself, and right here in this room you can just say, see this? Nobody's talk. See what the number is. Push the mode C and watch it jump way up. And you might even be able to borrow it with Mark's blessing.
I'll bring Paul here the one-on-ones on Monday.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I would like to take the machine home. Because these measurements are done.
You'll have to leave a deposit.
In a rural, okay. I'll leave Jamie.
Okay. So
and the reason why, because in a rural area, you don't have the rumble.
Yeah.
So when the rumble happens, you really notice it.
Yeah. Well, there were a couple of wineries that brought this to our attention. Lucy's Garden in particular, they paid a sound professional consultancy who really know sound, and they wrote a very lengthy document with lots of numbers and graphs and things, and made a very compelling case that revealed the problem. And Lucy's Garden is at least a mile and a half from the freeway. And that freeway, the rumble noise that carries across just causes that meter to, when you put it in mode C, to make it so it's unusable for the intended purpose.
From DOE?
I just saw it. It's
about the middle somewhere. Wait a minute. I think I got it here. No, this is.
Let's see here. I think it was near the end. Here it is. No. Yes.
Toward the end.
Oh, here.
It's on the other side of the chart.
It's a letter from Landerholm, and it quotes. And it's about.
Okay, I'll find.
Okay.
So, what kind do we have any a list of complaints about noise from wineries when they're having events?
Both Lucy's Garden and Rusty Grape, both of them are named in here because both of them have neighbors that are not happy with it. But when we sent out our code enforcement with their meter, they're not able to use it because of the ambient noise and with the mode C. So
even
it becomes
reducing, even changing this standard to a DBA, is that what we're talking from a DBC?
Yes.
So if we change it to a DBA standard, we're still not sure that they aren't going to have neighbor complaints.
Well, what we will have is an objective tool that'll be useful to and credible and certified by the state that says that is the standard, and we will provide equal application of the law, so we don't somehow have one standard for one industry and another standard for another industry, because this is unique to wineries. And that's part of their claim here that said, you singled out a particular industry and disadvantaged us over all the other industries.
But isn't this like a tavern or anybody who routinely holds outside events? They would all have to get permits.
Yes.
And they would all have to meet the noise levels.
Yes, and that noise level.
Which are very tough to meet.
Yeah.
Especially as the sun goes down, sound travels farther.
We don't require individual permits until it changes the size.
So, okay, but you know why people moved out to the country?
For quiet.
So.
Because I don't have that rumble.
We do have an obligation not to allow uses that substantially change the. So I think this is the first step. The first step is get a universal measurement.
The whole thing about standards is they need to be achievable, and I think Councilor Madore's point is that our standard, decibel-wise, is a bit tighter than the state, and then our measuring technique makes it virtually impossible for these wineries to
achieve
the standard.
I understand that. So this is a good first step, but this might not end. It might make the wineries for now feel like at least they're on a universal standard. It doesn't change what might still be complaints.
Right. This graph here is just one of them in the package. You see the horizontal lines here. Those are their standard. And the this noise line here is the actual ambient noise without the winery making any sound at all.
It's
just that is above both standards.
What's the number? 60? That noise is the noise of the freeway?
That was a mile and a half away, the freeway. Yeah. And then they bumped it twice, they pointed out what it was. But that's just noise. That's just ambient noise. Anyway, so why don't we, Mark, you could bring the instrument and talk to code enforcement about their experiences and what if we were to just simply have them use the whack by itself and tell us if they think that is the appropriate solution. Okay? Mm-hmm. Is there anything else?
You know that we're going to have a hearing on this.
It's an ordinance, so any ordinance modification amendment is a hearing. But it's a simple thing that just says we're going to revert to the state standard. Simple. Nothing else changes.
Was there a lot of interest in this? I saw there was a 2013.
Well, when we passed it, there was a lot of interest because we didn't have... This was a start-from-scratch ordinance.
I see.
So it was from beginning to end, we got a lot of input from everybody. And they really liked it. Everybody clapped, pretty much, that I saw. Both neighbors and wineries when we finally finished it.
And now we're going to change it.
Well, now we have to...
Fine-tune it.
We have to just correct an error.
I have a little bit of an issue because we've really bent the curve to allow them people to be out there. And the people here that you're dealing with were one of those people who make no wine. They buy wine and then bring it in and sell it. Rusty Grape does the same thing. They make no wine. Now, he said, well, we use someone else's facilities and we go down there and do our own wine, then we bring it back.
I would suggest that if there be other issues to deal with, that we would handle that separately. This is a very objective, numeric.
We're opening up the ordinance for wineries. And if that would be the case, we should go back and readdress what a winery is. And we don't enforce that. We do have that in place, but we don't enforce that either.
Well, you can always take a step two if we want to, but this is an immediate problem upon us that somehow is dysfunctional now that we need to have fixed.
I don't think that they're a legal winery in our description.
Well, we could certainly look into that. I think Councilor Medora is making a point that's valid because I've gotten these calls. And right now, and code enforcement is in a difficult position. The DVC standard is a standard that they can't enforce and no one can meet. And so we do need to do something with our code. It'll be up to you all what to do, but it doesn't help us as a staff or them as code enforcement to be kind of caught in the middle of this debate. And we need something that's been approved by DOE, which is also important. So we've got to do something with it because right now we're trying to implement a standard.
How did our legal force miss legal department miss this?
Well, I don't know. It didn't get sent up.
We can take them in turn. We can handle the noise problem, and then we can refine the definition of winery. I mean, it's almost like a retail outlet where they buy supplies and then resell. As in a wine, what do they call them, wine bars or taverns?
So that's what Rusty Grape and the South Video.
But I think your point is well taken in the sense, first of all, we need to deal with the noise. Agree with that. But if they got permits to put something in that's not exactly, that didn't meet the code at the time they put it in, that's a whole different potentially use problem.
I invite Councilor Mador to go out to Rusty Grape Friday night at 6 o'clock. it's a on-the-way-home stop bar.
Is everybody done? Anybody want anything?
I'm good.
Okay. We're adjourned. We're adjourned.
We're good.
Less formal. Thank you.
Okay.